we can do this. You know, this is a problem that we can solve. We can make this change that has really, you know, that people have been trying to make for decades.
Mostly when we talk about our measure, we talk about, hey, did you know it's illegal for more than three unrelated people to live together? That's where we start. And people say, I didn't know that, or that's wild, or I can't believe that is even a law. Occupancy is like, it's like the cap. It's like the most front and center exclusionary policy that we have the possibility of changing right now.
Hello, Boulder and the wider world. This is the Sharing Boulder Podcast. My name is Philip Ogren, and for our fifth episode, my co-host David Adamson and I interviewed the co-chairs of Bedrooms Are for People, Chelsea Castellano and Eric Budd. I'd like to start with a quick shout-out to Ethan Shapiro, who is the host of another local podcast called Changing the Climate. I had the pleasure of being on episode 42 of his show last week and had a lot of fun talking about how Boulder will be a much better city when we learn how to share it through better land use and housing policies. You can find his podcast on ccrboulder.com. Our guests today run Bedrooms Are for People, a grassroots political organization focused on occupancy reform in the city of Boulder. When this interview was recorded on April 17th, Bedrooms Are for People was working at full capacity collecting as many signatures as possible for an online petition to get occupancy reform on the ballot in November. As of the release of this episode, they have collected 3,400 signatures, which is a few dozen more than the 3,336 required by the city for the petition to be certified. People living in Boulder are going to be hearing a lot more about this important reform in the coming months as voters prepare to decide which way to vote. We hope you enjoy our conversation with Chelsea Castellano and Eric Budd.
Welcome to the Sharing Boulder Podcast. Today we have Eric Budd and Chelsea Castellano from Bedrooms Are for People. I just wanted to start off by saying that I'm an active volunteer, major supporter. I love this group. So don't expect any sort of journalistic independence from me. Welcome to our podcast. And we'd love to just start off by having you both introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about Bedrooms Are for People.
Sure, I can go first. Thanks for having us. It's exciting to be on a podcast. I'm Chelsea Castellano. I'm co-chair of Bedrooms Are for People, a measure that is trying to make it legal for at least one person to live in every bedroom of a home in Boulder. It's currently illegal in most homes for more than three unrelated people to live together, no matter how big the house is or how old the residents are. And so our measure expands access to housing in a way that just makes sense and makes our community a little more inclusive and affordable.
So when sometimes when you explain that to people, they're like, time out, that's crazy. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So that's for real.
Yeah.
If there's more than three people that are unrelated, it's against the rules or against the law. So what can happen to you if you're violating this ordinance?
Well, the city can send enforcement officers to your door. Unannounced, they'll come and do an inspection. They'll count the number of beds in your house. They'll count the number of toothbrushes.
I was going to make a joke about that. That's serious.
That is serious. Yeah, that's actually real because it's something that people tend to forget to remove when they think they're going to be inspected. So, so then if they find that there's a violation, then they go through the property manager or landlord and make sure that the people move out who are above the that three number. And if they don't, there's hefty fines and then they'll be evicted if they don't move out. So It's a really intensive process. And people are, you know, it's a really nerve-wracking process. People are really vulnerable. They're really scared. They don't know where to go. They don't know how they're going to afford it. So it affects the people who are, may have to move out. And it also affects the people who live in the house who don't have to move out, because then they have to figure out how they're going to pay that extra bit of money that they're going to owe that somebody else would have otherwise paid.
Yeah, one of the themes that you hear when you talk to people about this issue is just how prevalent it is around the city for people to be living in an overoccupied situation. And so it seems like you have lots of people who just live illegally. You know, it's sort of like a underclass of citizens who maybe don't register to vote, you know. Eric, do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, I'm Eric Budd. I'm the other co-lead on Bedrooms Are for People. I have been really involved in housing issues in Boulder, you know, the kind of trying to address the exclusionary policies that we're trying to address here for about the past 6 years. And Chelsea and I were both kind of on the original formation of like the Bedrooms Are for People team back in 2016. And so, you know, a lot of people came to know about our measure last year, but like we really, not only us, but people in the cooperative community have been organizing around the issue of occupancy for kind of in the most recent term in the past 7 to 8 years, but really for over 25 years. And so it just trying to give some sense of like how long this has been a problem. And I guess just expanding it on so many of the other issues of exclusionary policy in Boulder. Like, I think sometimes people who are really involved in housing, they wonder, well, it's like, you know, occupancy limits, it's an issue, but there's so many other issues. Like our policies where we only allow single family homes in 70 to 80% of the city, that we have downzoned so much of the city, that we have made these minimum lot sizes that make it incredibly expensive to develop a new lot, or you can't subdivide lots. And my response to that is that like occupancy is like, it's like the cap, it's like the end, it's like the most front and center exclusionary policy that we have the possibility of changing right now. And so many people in our group see this as just the beginning of making Boulder a more inclusive place. And that includes really dismantling a lot of these kind of racist and segregationist type of policies. Like if you look at the history of zoning and how it's used to exclude people, how apartments are not allowed. You know, a lot of people talk about the book, The Color of Law, and where it really outlines at the beginning of the book, just how housing exclusion has been used to segregate people. And, you know, we see occupancy limits as one piece of that that we want to work on first.
Awesome.
Eric, I'm wondering if you could expand on that a little bit. I want to disclose that I'm also a supporter of Bedrooms Are for People. I have some questions about your all's conception of where it goes from here and the bigger picture and your theory of change, et cetera. But maybe you could talk a little bit more about that racist issue because it's very contentious.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll say a little bit about this and then I want to hand it over to Chelsea. I mean, I think like you're right, David, like in the society that we have, whenever we call a system racist, I think it can be taken, you know, very personally in a way that it is really is difficult to talk about sometimes. And so I think that is the point, is that talking about systems of oppression is important. And like that's when we're talking to new people about this issue, you know, that's not what we lead with. It's as you know, like there's so much to learn and understand about the history of zoning and housing policy and how we got here. And obviously, mostly when we talk about our measure, we talk about, hey, did you know it's illegal for more than three unrelated people to live together? That's where we start. And people say, I didn't know that, or that's wild, or I can't believe that is even a law. And so as we kind of educate the general population more about this, we can kind of start to connect the dots of like, how do these policies come into place? Who is it excluding? Why is Boulder so white? Like, why don't we just ask questions about the way that things are? Questions like, you know, we love the open space and a lot of people like the height limit and whatnot. Or like the question of like, how does that exclude people? Like, just like thinking about these questions and thinking about what are the effects of these policies, even if they're policies that we generally like. So I think it's really trying to get people to be curious, learning, understanding. And what I've seen is there are parts of the country in Minnesota, in California, some of the cities in California, that they have started to undo some of these exclusionary policies, and they have tied it directly to the racist history that they have found in their communities. And, you know, in Berkeley, they really mentioned the exclusion of Chinese people, other people. So I think like the more you can point to the evidence of who is being excluded is really helpful.
One of the things I would love to communicate to our listeners is a bit more about the organization itself. So I'm really involved with this group, partially because I just really like the people and the work is fun. And maybe could you just give us some sense of why our supporters are so, you know, fanatical?
The volunteers, is that what you mean, Philip?
Yeah, volunteers.
Yeah. You know, I wonder that myself. You know, I try to put a finger on exactly why we have such an amazing group of people, and everyone brings something really special to the table, and it is really committed and reliable, and just really good humans who want to spend their time trying to make their community better, mostly just because they want to live in a community that is welcoming and just supports people of, you know, from all spectrums. And I think, you know, Eric and I are really transparent. I think the transparency helps to build a really strong organization. We try really hard not to, you know, create hierarchies, and essentially everyone who comes to meetings or attends events or does anything is there on their own volition. And we try to set a really strong direction and vision of what we're trying to accomplish. And it's really a shared vision that we build together as a team. And so I think that's a part of it. And this issue in particular just feels like we can do this. You know, this is a problem that we can solve. And if we just use this system that has been made available to us of putting a measure on the ballot, then we can make this change that has really, you know, that people have been trying to make for decades. I don't know. You'd have to ask. I'm sure everyone has a different answer, but I know I love the team, and it makes other teams feel less exciting. You know, maybe it's a work team or a different board or whatnot. You know, it's never as good as the Bedrooms Are for People team. So
that was a great answer, but it occurs to me that maybe we should back up just a little bit and outline what is the work involved. So like you've gone from being a group of nice people who want to make this change to like, we're going to get this on the ballot. So what does it take to get a measure on the ballot?
Well, I guess we don't know yet, but
well, certainly tell us about the online petition that's underway right now.
Eric can speak more to that. But really, you know, understanding the city's rules, diving in, getting through each step that, you know, in order to get a measure on the ballot, just to get something approved by the city is its whole, like, that's a whole nother project in and of itself. But yeah, if you want to dive, I don't know how far you want to dive into the details. I'm sure Eric can explain a bit more about the back end of getting the signatures. But really, it's just around organizing and saying, okay, we need to, one, make this easy for the people who want to support us, make it as easy as possible for the people who want to volunteer for us. And that's really our job. And then making it, you know, having strong messaging and trying to bring people into the fold along the way. But there's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It'd probably be a whole nother hour to say how to do this. Yeah.
Well, I think you could also talk a little bit about what an important democratic reform, and isn't it true it's the first implementation of our online petitioning reform that we made, right? And so you've borne the brunt of being the pioneer in that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, one thing we also like to talk about is this is the first initiative in the country that we know of that is actually reforming occupancy limits by the ballot measure. Almost entirely when occupancy limits have been overruled or changed, it's been with through legal means, basically that these ordinances were found to be illegal. And, you know, there's a famous Supreme Court case in 1974, which upheld occupancy limits, but there have been smaller court cases kind of in different states, the state of California, New York, Montana, essentially that occupancy limits have been overruled on the right to privacy laws that, you know, the government doesn't have the right to basically determine who's in your house, which is essentially what occupancy limits are saying. It's regulating who you can live with. And so, you know, that's a really big deal. And the online petition system. So our group really has extensive experience collecting physical signatures. We collected over almost 8,000 physical signatures last year. And, you know, many people in Boulder know the whole story about the city getting their own rules wrong and then the city council changing the rules on us halfway through such that we had to sue them. You know, unfortunately, the judge wouldn't overturn the city's decision, even though the judge said that the city completely screwed it up. And so I just highlight that to really say that, you know, there are a lot of forces in the city, on the city council, that are really interested in maintaining the status quo. And going through this process to organize people for what really is a common sense reform and bring it to the ballot is absolutely powerful.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your feelings about the cost of inaction. And why this measure of revising, reforming occupancy is really in everyone's favor.
Yeah, I'd like to bring it on a personal level. So one, this is a story of a woman who I met who lives here in South Boulder. I met her last year when we were doing our Democracy on Demand service, where we were delivering petitions to people's door to have them sign. And she's a single mother and was about to have her kids leave the house, to go to college. And she lived in a, you know, pretty big house, 4 bedrooms at least. And she wanted to stay there. And the only way that she could afford it was to rent out some of her bedrooms. And she wanted to put in an ADU in her basement. And so she could rent out the ADU and then have maybe 2 people living in the main house with her renting. And that was a way for her to continue to get income and to not live alone. And that wouldn't be possible under the current occupancy limits of today. So that's just, you know, highlighting a real world example of what the costs are of not changing the law, is that she is going to be confronted with the decision of how do I continue to live in this home that I've had my whole life, or, you know, my whole adult life. And if she can't do it legally, because a lot of people aren't willing to do it illegally. A lot of people are, but a lot of people aren't. Then, you know, she's confronted with a choice of, do I leave Boulder? You know, what do I do? So there's a lot of, I mean, you hear about it a lot. A lot of people end up leaving Boulder who are young. You know, there's this whole like idea of, you know, decline of families in Boulder. There's families leave because, one, they can't afford it. And two, you can't form families here. Because if you wanted to buy even a starter apartment or condo or studio, you're priced out. So really the only way to be able to live here when you're younger and not, and especially if you don't have support from family or whatever, then sharing housing is one of the only ways to make it affordable. So so we're not supporting people who we say we want to support.
It's a tremendous brain drain. I have seen this as a landlord, how many really wonderful people, you know, would like to stay here in Boulder, and they're folks, you know, nonprofit employees and graduate students and students with excellent backgrounds and all sorts, basically all young people, as you just said. I mean, there are 20 today, there are 20 condos affordable to people who make that are, you know, affordable to, you know, middle-class people. There's 20 condos priced less than $400,000 on the market today in Boulder. That's it. So we have completely eliminated for sale middle-income housing in this town. And that maybe is a subject for, you know, for us to discuss later on. But maybe, Eric, you want to follow up on that question too. You know, what's the cost of not reforming our occupancy laws?
Yeah, I mean, everything Chelsea said, I'll kind of go back to like, this is the first step. You know, I think every year that goes past, you're continuing to price out more and more young people. You know, I live in a housing cooperative, and two people who live here in our cooperative said that they were looking to buy or rent something in the affordable housing program, like, you know, outside the cooperative, that on their own, and that between the two of them, they made a little above the cap for affordable housing. And so, but then of course they follow that up with, well, we're above that cap, but there's nothing actually that we can afford on the market rate that would cover us. And so, you know, what happens to folks in that position? They're just out. And so I'd really underscore like the family formation piece, but also like what's happening in Boulder is that every person that leaves that's like lower or median income is often, you know, the person coming into Boulder is making a much higher income. And so really the time to take action on this is now, because people say, well, I don't want to live in a community where it's only high income or wealthy people can live here. And it's like, then we need to take steps immediately. And occupancy limits is one, you know, relaxing other zoning, to build more kind of middle income housing. We have a middle income housing strategy that we literally do not underpin in this city. You know, we don't provide affordable townhomes or duplexes. And so what happens with occupancy is that like some of the people that have signed a petition and say that, oh yeah, when I was younger, I lived, you know, four or five in a house. And that's how they were able to save up enough money to eventually buy a place or to move into a place where it was a legal living situation. And so this is just such an important piece of, you know, who you're choosing to live with, giving you the opportunity to save money, to share on housing costs, but not only that, but transportation costs, food costs, childcare costs. It's really just so fundamental of being in a community where you can share resources, you know, and that's the poorer people in our community, they have to share resources to stay here. There's no other way to do it.
Chelsea, did you want to jump in?
Oh, well, I was just, you know, we kind of focus on the the financial cost. And I think there's a really big portion of the cost of the current system that is social. And it's about, you know, making it so that essentially the government is telling us that it's not okay to have a family that you choose and that you're not related to. So that's a really big problem. And it's discriminatory and oppressive. And I know that, you know, we have people on our team and we've heard stories and read the research on how these laws have affected LGBTQ people who are, you know, until it was legal to get married, they were living in this situation illegally quite a bit more. So that, you know, it's really just discriminatory and there's that whole piece of it. And then there's the piece around people having to live in hiding. And so they're not participating in, the community dialogue or in, you know, in public participation on different topics that the community is discussing, or, you know, even just with their neighbors, they feel like they have to hide from their neighbors because they don't want to be evicted, even if they, you know, they don't know their neighbors because they don't want them to know them because they don't want to be evicted. And like, that's not the community that we should be building. And so there's a really big social cost to continuing the way that we are.
I talked about cooperatives a little bit. I live in one. And so I'm part of the Boulder Housing Coalition. And one of my roles on the board there is to help a part of the approval process of new cooperatives. And the city council regulated cooperatives so hard that we are actually at risk in the near future of having fewer cooperatives in Boulder than when that law was passed, because it is so hard. And that piece of like social housing, you know, just being able to have a group of people, four, five, six people, be able to kind of form a small household without all this extra regulation, is just incredibly huge. And I've seen it living in COVID. There's 12 people or so that live in my house, and being able to have that social structure and that support system is just so incredibly important in the community. And we're missing that. And it's, in so many cases, it's not legal to have that kind of system.
The cost, I think, to people who live here of all the in-commuting, there's carbon emissions, there's toxic auto emissions, there's more congestion on the highway. And then if they employ people, those people are stressed out because they have to commute in. If you're working with employees, you know, your kids are in school with those employees who have to commute in. I just think that the population issue in Boulder is very fraught. There's good reasons to be concerned about how we add people. But it seems that the benefits of adding people can be huge. And I wonder if you're seeing, you know, some business support, if you're seeing people, again, because of your great effort of going out there and dialoguing people, I wonder if you're seeing people understanding that not only are veterans for people, but the planet is in part for people, and we can be a very beautiful part of the planet and of this town. And do you feel that's, there's more realization of the potential benefits of not doing it the way we're doing it now, with everyone having to commute in, all the employees?
I'd love to answer that one. So
sorry,
question. I mean, so, you know, one of the things that I've observed when I speak to people about this issue, and I've been doing a lot of that because I'm active with the petition campaign, is this issue has super wide appeal. I mean, People immediately recognize that this is a nonsense rule, and everyone has their answer for why they really appreciate that we're doing what we're doing. And you know, I wanted to circle back actually, because it's not just for young people, right? We're not all on the same trajectory of like, we're gonna scrape our way through graduate school and then we're gonna save money so we can buy a house here. I mean, some of us are going to be renters our whole lives, and there ought to be housing for people of all ages. This is a super huge issue for seniors, housing. We've kind of normalized empty nesters living in large houses by themselves. Meanwhile, other seniors are struggling to find housing that's suitable for them. I would love to see us normalize seniors living together in large houses. I think there's super wide appeal on many angles of this, from the environment, social justice, economic.
Absolutely. And the city council actually had some public hearings in 2014. It was explicitly to allow seniors to live together. And I have to say that public hearing was, you know, one of the most depressing things that I've ever seen, because you basically had kind of some people in the community who really didn't want to see this kind of change essentially block exactly what you're talking about, you know, blocking a policy that would have let seniors share their homes or be able to age in place, be able to live with four or five or six other people in an environment that would be absolutely make a lot of sense. But the reality is that housing costs have gone up so much that it's not really affordable to even for seniors to downsize many times and stay inside Boulder, because there aren't the options. They can't afford to. And it's a huge problem.
The scheduling constraints of four political activists who juggle careers, friends and family, and daily life conspired to cut our interview short. If you would like to learn more about Bedrooms Are for People, please visit bedroomsareforpeople.com. As always, you can find show notes with links mentioned in this episode at sharingboulder.us. This episode of Sharing Boulder was produced by David Adamson and Philip Ogren. Sound and video editing was done by Philip Ogren. The intro music was sampled from Oslodum by Gilberto Gill and is available for use under the Creative Commons Sampling Plus license.